different in style with Guardian Networks.
This is just an introduction to my talk show. I'm going to be talking about happiness today. Something that sounds so very simple, yet it can be very complex, because there is a scientific basis to this notion of happiness. And this show is going to be about facts. We're going to talk about facts, and we're going to talk about feelings, because those two things are interconnected. My whole theme of my program is going to be about connections, connectedness. We have been disconnected one from the other in COVID. And how do we get back to a sense of community? How do we get back to a sense of being there for one another, trusting one another? How do we build back trust? You know, we've all been locked down in our own houses at the beginning of COVID. And once something is broken, how do you build that back? You know, we are a wonderful culture, we're wonderful people. And how do we get back that sense of belonging one to the other? How do we do that? And so I want to talk about fundamentals. So if I'm going to talk about fundamentals, I got to talk about the nitty-gritty about who I am. I'm new to the talk show circuit. I spent 25 years, yes, 25 long years, most of them happy years, at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and my family. I love them dearly. And I just thought it was time to move on to something different. And, you know, the COVID has, I think, made a lot of us reevaluate our lives. So, you know, it was a shock to our reality. One day we were going about our normal lives. And the next day, school was closed. Businesses were closed. We weren't sure what this disease was. And so we had to reconceive of what our reality is. So during those 2 years, I really thought about, you know, where am I and where do I want to be? And so a lot has happened to me, as a lot has happened to a lot of us in this society. And so I decided, you know what? I don't like where I am. You know, I felt as if I had plateaued in my professional life. And one day I talked to my dad. My dad died last year. He was 81. Father Addison Turnquest, the Reverend Addison Turnquest. And I am the most irreverent daughter of the late Reverend Addison Turnquest, God rest the dead. And so I told my dad, I said, Dad, you know, we're in this COVID, and I'm thinking of leaving my job. And he said to me, you know, he's of a different generation. He was born in 1940 during World War II. So he was of that great generation. So he was like, you want to leave your job, your good government, stable job in the midst of a pandemic? Who's going to do that? I said, I am. I said, Dad, because we're in the midst of a pandemic, nothing in life is certain. And I am just stuck. I said, and I'm going to leave and jump into the unknown. And he was, you know, he was in a panic. He said, who does that? You have a child to take care of, and I have a special needs child. I said, but I have one life to live, and I have to do it with great courage and with great purpose. And my dad lived with great courage and great purpose. And we are, as a country, we have always lived with great courage and great purpose. And I hope that, you know, those are some of the themes that I want to inform our discussions, and we can learn one from the other. So it's going to be a show about self-discovery, rediscovering who we are as individuals, and also who we are as people. Also knowing that we are unique people. Yes, we are. We're very unique. And we can embrace that uniqueness. And I think because we have been so separated from each other, we lose sight of who we are. And who do you think we are as a people? I have some thoughts, and I want to hear from you. I think we're very humorous people. We have such a fabulous sense of humor. We have not a wicked sense of humor. We have a wicked sense of humor. Just our language, you know. I was thinking, I went to get some McDonald's for my son today before I dropped him by his Grammy. She has a shop in the Grove. And I went to order some food. And so the lady asked me, she said, "Do you want some sausages with your pancake?" I had to laugh. I said to myself, it is a sausage, you know. I went to school in England. I don't have a fake Oxonian accent, you know, but I try to incorporate humor in all that I do. It brings some levity to difficult situations. So, you know, we say sausages in the Bahamas, and sausages is a happy word. You know, that's a Bahamian word. And you have to smile when you say the word sausages. I dare you. I was reading an article many years ago, Nikki Kelly's daughter. She talked about, you know, how we are so unique as a people. And you have to be happy when you say the word sausages. I dare you now to say that word and don't smile. You have to smile when you say it. So we have happy words in our vocabulary, you know. We also have the word, one of my favorite words. I was driving up Blue Hill Road today, Blue Hill Road North. And I saw in the corner of my eye, this word is one of my favorite Bahamian words. Kapunko. It's Kapunko Liquor Store, but I think they out of business now. That's a unique Bahamian word. You know, it means when you tone up too much. But it also could mean when you break up, you're just tired and you're a kapunko. That's a Bahamian word. Unique. We're unique people and we have unique language. And we express ourselves in such unique, happy ways. Another Bahamian word that's so very fun and happy is spankadocious. Oh, my producer and his intern, they're looking spankadocious today. Oh, yes, and they're waving at me. They're looking spankadocious. So we have happy words. But are we a happy people right now? Do you think we're happy people? So we're going to talk about happiness and what does that mean in a Bahamian context. And we're also going to see if we could find ways to measure happiness. How do you measure happiness? Can you measure happiness? So I worked at Foreign Affairs for a very long time, 25 years. My degree is in international studies. I went to the University of Leeds, and I had a great opportunities as a result of working at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I was able to get advanced certifications in some special areas. I went to the University of Oxford for a year. That was fabulous. So I have a depth of knowledge and experience I hope to bring to these conversations, but also trying to bring practical, real-world experience to the equation and to how we engage one with the other. I think that's so important. And I'm hoping that we can have a great dialogue based on mutual respect. And we just, you know, see how we can move this country forward through exchanges of ideas. All right. So I think that is so very important. So we're going to look at happiness. And what is happy? So as I said, we're looking at fact-based concepts. We're looking at happiness based on facts. All right, so I researched an article by this lady. Her name is Kendra Cherry. Even that name is cheerful, Cherry. And it was reviewed by a PhD student named Ms. Goldman. All right, so we're going to look at happiness first, based on a scholarly academic. Now, I'm not going to bore you. This is not going to be a snooze fest. So wake up. Wake up, okay? So let's look at it from an academic point of view first, and then we're going to get into real-world reality. So according to this lady and according to psychology, happiness is an emotional state characterized by feelings of joy, satisfaction, contentment, and fulfillment. While happiness has different definitions, it is often described as involving emotions and life satisfactions. So happiness is based on the feelings, okay? And we are emotional creatures. We're not always driven by just facts, but our relationship to those facts. I don't know if my producer, Arlington, he's going to be my new friend. You know, we can see something and look at it in a factual way, but based on our experience with that thing, that helps to shape our perception towards it and our feelings towards it. So let's take something very simple, okay? I don't know, Arlington, he looks like a person, he loves to eat healthily. So we all know that oranges, right? Oranges are healthy and we should eat fruits and vegetables, all right? So we see the orange, and orange is full of vitamin C and it's very good for us. My relationship with an orange, and I may like to eat oranges, all right? And I'm happy when I eat them. And so I eat oranges. My relationship with it is different because I may have had, let's say, my mom. She made me eat oranges. She cut them up and give them to me for breakfast every morning when I was a child. So I see that as a parent loving their child and wanting the best for their child. Now, Arlington is a very sharp guy, very smart. He may have been bullied in school, and someone cut an orange and poured it all over his head one day in front of all his peers, all his friends, and they laughed at him. So that, you know, he felt embarrassed. He felt a sense of shame because of something someone did to him with this orange. So he doesn't like oranges because he connects trauma and he connects a sad event with this orange. And you shouldn't, but we connect facts and feelings. You know, the Bible, and I'm very spiritual. I am a devout Anglican. And the Bible tells us that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So we don't think in our heart, but our head and our heart are connected. And as I said, we're all connected. Everything is connected to everything else. So fact and feelings go together. A lot of times we operate not on how something is, but how we feel about that thing. All right, so happiness is a subjective state of mind. All right? So when most people talk about happiness, they may be talking about how they feel in the present moment. All right? And looking at life as a whole, how do we feel about where our life is? Not where we want it to be, but where our life is at this present time. All right. Happiness tends to be broadly defined by psychologists and social scientists, and I teach at the University of the Bahamas political science. So I am a political scientist. And as I well-being, all right, when we talk about a person's emotional state, as it sounds, subjective well-being tends to focus on individuals' overall personal feelings about their life in the present moment. So two components of happiness or subjective well-being, two components of happiness and balance of emotion, all right? Everyone experiences both positive and negative emotions, sometimes at the same time. Feelings and moods. Happiness is generally linked to experiencing positive feelings more than negative feelings. This concept of life satisfactions, this relates to how satisfied you feel with the different areas of your life, including your relationships. And relationships are so important. Relationships, when we don't have something is when we value it most. You know, I don't have my father here present with me because, as I said, he passed away last year. But the things that I remember about him are not the tangible things, not the physical material things, what he used to drive, what he used to wear, no. But, you know, how he made me feel as a person. He was always a person who encouraged people. He was always a person who believed in the best for people. He always said, you know, if he can't help someone. He's not going to hurt someone. So those are the things that I take away from my dad's life. All right. And it's about relationships. I was watching a show about a Rockefeller, and he was on 60 Minutes, and he talked about how he sold all of his possessions in his house. He had an estate sale. And I mean, he had obviously valuable pieces of furniture. He had, paintings. And he said he gave them all away because what was most important to him, he found, is the relationships that he have. He said he found as he was spending too much time, he had to insure his paintings. He had to make sure that, he had proper security to ensure that they weren't, stolen. And he had to make sure that the furniture was well kept. And he was spending so much time trying to maintain these things that it was taking up so much of his daily life. So he realized he needed to shed the things that weren't important to him. So what have we shed in COVID that's not important? And what have we embraced in COVID that we think is important to our sense of well-being and our happiness? I want y'all to think about that. And hopefully that will spur our conversation as we go forward. All right, so signs of happiness. What are some signs of happiness? All right, so some signs of happiness are, one, do you feel as if you are living currently the life that you want? Also, do you feel as if you will accomplish all that you want in life? Are you feeling satisfied with life? And are you feeling more positive than negative? Satisfaction. You have to figure out where you are. You may not be where you want to be, but are you content in this moment? And I always struggle with that because I'm a very ambitious person and I don't ever want to be content. But then can I ever be happy? So you may only have $10. You may want to have 20, but you only get $10. You may only have 3 cans of tuna and a leg of sausage in your refrigerator. This is where you are right now. This is not where you want to be, but can you accept that reality for what it is right now? And hopefully by accepting your reality, you can then have some peace and contentment and then still try to move forward in your life. But if you live in a false reality, how is that going to help you? So just some questions that I have. And as I said, I want to really hope that I help to inspire conversation and that we listen respectfully to one another. And, I want to find a simple question. And can you answer honestly? In this very moment, in COVID, 2 years into COVID, we have lost so much. A lot of us have lost jobs. A lot of us have lost loved ones. A lot of us have lost material possessions. Some people have lost their homes. Some people have lost their cars. Have you lost what matters? Have you lost a sense of purpose? Have you lost a sense of hope? Have you lost a sense of happiness? Behemoths, we are always a very joyous and happy people. Do we still have that? Or are we losing a sense of that joyousness and happiness? And then we could talk about what is the role of government? Is government supposed to help you to develop a sense of well-being and a sense of happiness? All right? So getting back to signs of happiness. All right? Happy people. Just because you're happy doesn't mean that you don't feel those negative emotions. You do. Some happy people still feel the whole range of emotions. They feel frustration. They feel anger. They feel boredom. I pray God that y'all not bored with me yet. Loneliness and even sadness from time to time. But even when faced with discomfort, they have an underlying optimism that things may get better. And studies have shown over and repeatedly that people who are optimistic live longer. They do. People who see the glass is half full and not half empty. So do you feel as if there's still hope and happiness out there for you in the future? Do you feel as if you can be happy again? And so those are some of the things I want to talk about. And then talk about, you know, what do you think of the role of government? Is the government supposed to help you to create well-being for yourself? You know, philosophers from Aristotle, they talked about what's the role of government officials, politicians. And there's a theory that one of the key purposes of politicians is to ensure the happiness of its citizens. And how do you do that? How do you create an environment in which people thrive, in which people feel they have a future? How do you do that? And I want to ask you the question. Is it that you think we ask so much of others and ask so little of ourselves? Is it the role of government to make you happy? Or is that your responsibility as an individual? And for you to help others achieve their great purposes and purpose in life? Is that? What do you think? Do we ask so much of others and so little of ourselves? What do you think? Do we think we look for people to solve our problems and we don't want to help to solve our own? So just give you a little anecdote. I say that I have a special needs child. He's autistic and he is precocious like his mother. And I went into a food store and I met this lady and we just had a chat. And she was telling me she also has a special needs child. So I helped her out a little. I saw her again. She told me she had lost her job. And she asked me to help out. I said, my dear, if I help you out now, this is not going to solve your problem later. Sometimes you have to say no. And tough love hurts sometimes, but it's necessary for people to grow. So, you know, I hope we have an honest conversation with each other. And I hope that we grow together. And we can see how that we can bring this country back to a sense of purpose and connection, that we want to help one another. There was a study done recently that 25% of us don't know our neighbors. We don't. And so that means we're not connecting with the people around us. And, you know, life is about choices. And I am happy that I have had the experiences that I have. And I choose to live in the area in which I was born. I live in Rock Crush. I live in an urban community. And we're going to stick a pin right there and we're going to go to commercial break and then I'm going to talk about Rock Crush.
Join the Nassau Guardian as we celebrate International Women's Day, Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. This global day is celebrating the historical, cultural, and political achievements of women in the Bahamas and around the world. Join us as we celebrate and recognize the outstanding Bahamian women in religion, politics, sports, national security, business, education, and community affairs. For more information, call the Nassau Guardian at 302-2300 or call your account executive. But join us as we celebrate women's achievements, raise awareness against bias during International Women's Day, Tuesday, March 8th, 2022.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with Natasha Turnquist. And so the telephone lines are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And the text line is powered by BTC 422-4796. So we have a caller on the line. It is blinking. My producer will patch her in. Thank you. Welcome.
God bless you and good morning, Natasha Turnquist. How do you do?
I do well, thank you. And how are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
All right, so we're doing an informal survey.
Indeed.
Okay, so let us know how you're feeling today.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Let me first of all say this is, I don't know if this is your first time on air, but this is my first time hearing you.
Yes, it is.
Wonderful, and congratulations and the best to you in that way.
Thank you.
As you were going down, somewhat going down memory lane earlier about how happy we Bahamians are and how we express ourselves, just as you was mentioning that word kapunkel, that was on my mind. And I remember as a boy, we used to say kapunkel up.
Kapunkel up!
Yes. When you break up, when you're tired, when you just out of it. You just kapunkel right up.
Kapunkel.
So it was nice to hear that another Bahamian out there remembered that word.
Yeah, and I think we have to get back to who we used to be.
Yes.
I mean, even though we're going to...
Who we is.
Yeah, who we is.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I think you can still have the core foundation.
Yes.
And build on it because, you know, you have to figure out who you are at the core.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have a strong foundation, you can then build on it because, you know, life is about change. But then if you have something solid to build upon, then you could go further. So I think we got to have pride in who we are. And that's such a unique Bahamian word. So it's not only me thinking about kapunkel. But I hope you're not kapunkel this morning.
Well, you know, by the way, may I call you Natasha?
Oh, you can call me Natasha.
All right, wonderful. And I'm JT.
JT.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. You know, speaking about happiness, while growing up, you know, my grandparents were from Cat Island, and I did not grow up there. I grew up here with them here in Nassau.
Okay.
My mom's parents, and when I was growing up, I never knew what the word poor was.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we always had food to eat. We could go on the farm. My grandfather was a fisherman. We were always taught how to be respectful of ourselves.
Yes.
As well as others. Saying hello and hi and good morning and good mom. Yes, sir. Yes. No, sir. To your adults.
Yes.
Or the adults in your neighborhood and your family. We were taught how to basically show forth good character. And I honestly believe, Natasha, that the Bahamas, as it used to was, like the Bimanites like to say, it used to be a time when, though we didn't have much materially, we had much morally. And we were comfortable and we were content with the little that we had because we valued those small blessings. You know the old gospel song, count your blessings one by one?
Yes. And I agree with you. And I think you hit the nail on the head, JT, and thank you for calling. I think you said, you know, we were content with what we had. And I always struggle with that because, you know, we're taught in this world that we're in, because we're in a consumer-based society. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is we need to consume, we need to have, we need to want. And you will never be able to feed that machine, because if you have an empty vessel, no matter what you put in there, you're never going to fill it up. So I think, you know, and I always struggled with my dad with that. You know, he just said, be satisfied. Be satisfied with what you have. So contentment comes by accepting what it is that you have.
Yeah.
And embracing it and just acknowledging that it is enough.
And not liking everything about yourself, but accepting you for who you are.
Yes.
Because I can tell anybody, I like me, but I don't like everything about me.
Yes.
But because I know who I am, the way God has created me, the person deep on the inside, I thank God for me.
Yes.
And I love to encourage people. I love to say, you know, hi and hello. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes. No, sir. You know, mom and so on. And the Bahamian of today take an offense when you call the females, particularly females, yes, ma'am.
Yes.
I don't understand why a lot of people don't understand. That's just a matter of showing respect.
Yes. Yes.
But in any event, thank you for your time, Natasha, and keep up the good work.
Thank
you. I will continue to listen.
Thank you.
God bless you.
And thank you, and God bless you too, JT. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about self-acceptance. Acceptance isn't always approval, because a lot of things about myself I don't approve of. But we have to embrace ourselves. We have to know who we are and choose who we wish to become. You know, this is who I am. And hopefully I will grow to be my best self. But we have to accept ourselves. And so self-acceptance is the key. And accept other people. We don't have to approve of other people. We need to accept that, you know, people are going to share different points of views. And that's okay. People are going to have different beliefs than us. And that's okay. Once you understand who you are and you're unshakable in your belief, then you can move forward with grace and gratitude and generosity. And I think those things are lacking. We have become so selfish because we've become afraid. You know, I have to hold on to what it is that I have because I don't know when the next thing is coming my way. And when you hold on to that, that's all you're going to have because you're not opening up yourself to others. And that takes courage, you know. And in order to live fully and to live well, we have to have courage. And so he talked about JT, he talked about Cat Island. So Cat Island and courage. And, you know, we are unique people and our islands too are also unique. So JT talked about his Cat Island roots and how, you know, he was taught how to be manly and how to be content with what they have. You know, they didn't have a lot of lot materially things, but they had a lot of family connection. And so, you know, we are unique, and even our islands are unique. And I find Cat Islanders, you know, our dear Prime Minister, the Honorable Philip Brave Davis, he is from Cat Island, and he is very mannerly, and he's very respectful of others. So is that a Cat Island upbringing? I know we're all, as a people, very respectful and very mannerly. And, you know, Cat Islanders, I find, are very mannerly. They're very elegant. And they're also very snazzy dresses. You know, his wife is a fashionista. She's always very elegant. And they match, you know. She may wear a blue dress and he wears a blue tie. She may wear a purple pantsuit and he wears a purple tie. So, you know, they're very, very snazzy. And we are unique people. We have specifics, I think. You know, it's a generalization, but every island, I think, has unique characteristics. And as a people, we also share common traits, I think. So we're wonderful people, and I think we need to embrace that. And, you know, my parents are from Long Island. My mom's from Roses. And my dad is from Long Island. And Long Islanders, we're very independent. We're self-reliant. That's a good thing. That's also going to be a challenge. Sometimes you need to accept help. But we are go-getters. You know, we go out there and we make it happen for ourselves and for our families. And we also have a very dry sense of humor. James Catlin was from Long Island. And you know, he said that sometimes you can't take yourself too seriously. You have to realize that humor and levity is important, especially in difficult times, because we get plenty of pressure. as my friend Tommy Girl is. I don't know if Tommy's listening to me. She keeps telling me, she's saying, Tasha, too much pressure for his pipe. I tell her, honey, I'm not a licensed plumber and I can't afford one. Okay, so, you know, humor helps to lighten the load. And we have a lot of pressure on top of our moles. You know, people say your mole. That's on the top of your head. You know, we have too much pressure. So you have to ease the pressure some kind of how. And laughter helps to lighten the load, I think. So we always found a way to push through pain and push through challenge, I think, through humor, because we are very humorous people. So I have some texts. I'm going to read some texts, and then I think we have the phone lines. And the phone lines, again, are 323-6232. So we're going to have another caller is calling in. Welcome to Guardian Radio AM.
Okay, can I get on the show, please?
You are on the show, ma'am. You are on.
Good morning. Can I say Mrs. Thorncrest, or can I say like Abraham and your name is Thorncrest? Can I say Mrs.
Turnquest? Yes, you can call me. You could call me Natasha. You could call me Tasha. You could call me Miss Turnquest. I'm very informal.
I'd like to say,
we say Tasha. Call me Tasha, babe. Call me Tasha, my darling, ma'am.
I feel more comfortable, but I know you are Miss Turnquest. I'll give you the honor. But listen, I'm not a born Bahamian.
Okay.
I came to Machutan in Nagua at the age nine years old.
Oh, right? Okay.
My father was recruited by the Erickson Company to take the salt of the salt pond.
Oh, okay.
At Machutan in Nagua, those days, they used to have to go in the salt pond, break the salt, put it on the trucks, and then send it down to the dock, a belt on the ship, and the salt go up in the, like a heap of snow.
Wow.
Going down into the boat. Into the dock, take the salt and take it somewhere where they used to go. I'm just saying, like, how I grew up in Machutan. I was born in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Oh, okay.
Born in a place called Salt Key.
Okay.
And, I came to the Bahamas through my father. My family was recruited. Those days, they used to recruit men from islands to come to work.
Okay.
And he was one of the persons, our family, we got there, and they gave us a house to live in and everything. I went to Inagua Old Age School, me and all my siblings. And I lived there until I came to Nassau. But what I was saying, I want to say that it was a different way in growing up them days.
All right.
And for food, my mother had a plantation, they used to call it them days. And my father, they used to work on the plantation, and they used to burn the same conch shells, which you see we have here thrown away, boil them and make lime kilns.
Okay.
And make white lime to paint your houses and sell it. And they also used to burn the coal and make coal to cook on.
Okay.
Them days. Now, that was... I born in the 39.
Oh, wow.
But now I gone through almost four or five generations with my mother, my children, my children's children. And today when I look around, we had in our kitchen a mill that used to grind corn. We had four or five drums of corn. We had yellow corn. We had purple corn. White corn. And we had guinea corn.
Wow.
Every day from school, each child had to grind four halves of corn.
Wow.
And get the grits and put it in different baskets. And when your mother come home, she fan it around in the fanner, take off the husk and save the grits and the corn flour. We make bread for the Sunday morning.
Wow.
And then they used to have to go in the canal and chop the fish. And but see, the children today don't know anything about things like this. Because they never... people never tell, or maybe families never discuss it with their children, or, you know, but everybody know now the microwave quickly right away.
Yes.
That's all we know.
You're right.
My children do, and my grandchildren. But it was a pleasure growing up in those days. And you know, when we had lots of sheep and goats and stuff like that, and we never sell it. When they kill it, they send a plate of meat down the line. Sucus and amicus and very everything. When they go fishing, they send fish down the line. The paper, nothing.
Yes.
Go in the next neighbor house and cut out a 2 pound of lard, what you want, because them days, we never had no Western oil and this and that. And we never had no bleach and Tide. And we had brown soap, scrub and board, and for board leaves. And scrub board. And a canister of water boiling over there. And you put your white clothes in there with a little round ball of blue. Oh, my God. I can write a book.
You can write a book. You should write a book. Because like you said, you're living history. You were born in 1939.
I am enjoying your show.
Thank you so much. And I didn't get your name.
And I, for me to go on and tell you all the story, I have to write a book.
You have to write a book. And give me a name before you go, please.
Annie Bo.
Miss Annie Bo. Thank you, Miss Annie Bo, originally from Inagua. Thank you, Annie Bo. It's been a joy chatting with you.
I love your show, and I'll continue to listen to it.
Thank you so much.
And have a wonderful and empowering day.
You have a wonderful, empowering day. Thank you. And so, listen, Annie Bo, I love that. Annie Bo was born in 1939. She had been born the same generation as my dad. And they were born during the war. The World War II started in 1939. And this fabulous psychologist, Dr. Richard Adley of the University of the Bahamas, he did a personality chart of all the different generations. And he said the generation of Miss Annie Bo's time and my dad's time and my mom's time, the greatest generation, they have a certain characteristic. They have this thing called grit. Now, she talked about grits. She talked about how when she was young, they had a different types of grits, the yellow grits, the guinea corn grits, and she had to go and work. She had to work in order to eat. So they literally had grits, and they had grit. Grit is stickability. Grit is when you don't have a way and you make a way out of no way. So grit is part of the key to happiness and the key to success. All right, so they had it in abundance. This thing about having to survive in difficult situations. My mom said in the beginning of COVID, only the strong survive. So you have to shift your mentality, one, of how are you going to deal with this very difficult situation, still keeping, as JT said, your sense of integrity and character, and knowing that you have to have grit and you got to work to get where you want to be. So, you know, even if you can't go and, as Ms. Annie Bo said, go make your own grits and you don't have no mill, go and get Mr. Quaker's Oats grits. Not the oats. Get the Quaker's grits. They have it in yellow and white. Eat some and get some grits. Get some fortitude. Get some courage and conviction to push through the pain and the fear that you may have. Yes, you may not have a job right now, but find a way to do within the law, mind you, within ethical constraints and within the eyes of the Lord to make a way for you and your family. Somebody need the car clean. Somebody need the yard weed. Listen, pride goeth before fall. There is dignity in all honest work. I believe that no matter, it's not what you do that defines who you are, because you have some people who, yes, I am going to respect you because you went to college and you sacrificed and you are now a lawyer, you are now a doctor, you are now an accountant. Yes, and I respect your skill and I'm going to respect you. That doesn't mean that you're better than me or you're better than the person who reads the yard. We all have our role and our purpose in life. It's my mother's one of her favorite Shakespearean, my fake Oksunian accent is coming out, her favorite Shakespearean quote is, all the world's a stage and we're all actors. We all have our roles to play and we're all important. If I don't have a producer and a fabulous intern, I'm not going to be able to have a successful show. We need each other in order to succeed. And Miss Annie Bo hit the nail on the head today. She said that she went in the kitchen and they grind the corn and they didn't just hog it up and be a pig hog. Oh, no, They were not P.I.G. hogs back in those days, people, okay? They got the corn and they went to give it out to the community because she realized that you're not living in a bubble. You're not living to yourself because your bubble may get burst. Because if Miss Annie Bo's family was P.I.G. hogs and they said, but they ain't gonna give their neighbor no corn and no fish, what you think the neighbor gonna do? The neighbor gonna see them eating all the time, eh? And you only gonna press your face to that glass and see people eating for so long and you don't get vexed. All right? So, you know, the rich are not living in a bubble. They're not immune to what is happening in a broader society because you can't live in your ivory tower forever. You got to come out in the community. So if you only have one set of people have, the others that don't have, they have a problem with that. So there was a sense of community and there was a sense of enlightened self-interest because Miss Annie Bo's family understood that if, in order to help myself, I got to help other people because it's going to come back to me in some form or fashion. So they understood that. And what studies have found, and this has been such a fascinating conversation, we haven't even talked about the UN did a whole report on happiness where they found that it is important to have trust. And so they trusted each other to help one another. And they thought that that was so very important. And have we lost that? And what they have found is that in this pandemic, the people who have suffered the most are the young in terms of their mental health outcomes, their stress levels, their anxiety levels, also the poor, obviously. But the young don't have any experience of having to go through challenge. So they don't have anything to really, any reserves to call upon. Miss Annie would have reserves to call upon. My mother and people of her generation would have reserves to call upon. They remember what it was like not to have. So they then switch their brain into that mentality that I'm just have to do what is necessary to get beyond this. It's going to end at some point. My mother still loves Spam. My mother's birthday was on the 9th of February. She was 79. And she loved Spam. So I sent her a little goodie bag with some Spam. And Spam was a wartime treat. And so she still sees that as a treat. I'm like, you're 79, it's full of salt, but you know, live a little. And so she still has a connection to her youth. And her youth was one of crisis. The whole world was in upheaval, was in an existential fight for the very survival. Life went berserk. You had evil and good fighting against each other. And the whole world was in chaos. And so they know what it is to not know what's going to happen tomorrow. But the young people now, they don't have that history to refer to. They don't have, well, no, well, listen, we have been through a complete world crisis and we have gone on to succeed and to get on the other side. They don't have that to refer to. So hopefully by listening to the experience of people like Annie Bo, to hear that we need each other and we need each other to survive, that they will learn the need for connection and the need for grit. So are we going to take another... I apologize, this is my first show, and I wish I could take more calls. One more call, can we get one more call? Okay, yes, thank you. No? Okay, so I'm going to take a text. So let's take a text, okay? And I say it's important to look at all sides of the equation. So I'm going to look, and I think it's important for us to address, you know, challenges. So we have a text. So Natasha, you keep talking about helping people, but you didn't believe in helping that woman on that day. You're already starting your show with hypocrisy. Help people. Yes, I believe in helping people. And sometimes we are hypocrites. We're all hypocrites because we say one thing and we do the next. And, it, you know, I'm going to own my hypocrisy. Doesn't make it right, but it makes it real. And sometimes if I keep helping you by giving you $20 here and $20 here, am I solving your problem? Am I being a hypocrite by telling you no? You know, I have a special needs child. And my dad, you know, I asked my dad for help once and he told me no. And I cried like a baby. It was bad. Don't cry when you look ugly. And that was the best thing that he did for me. He told me no in the short term to help me later. Now or later, yes, I didn't help her in that day. But if I keep giving you $20 and keep giving you $20, what am I telling you? That you could depend upon me to solve your problems always? Or can I help her by letting her know that she has the capacity to save herself? I will help you as much as I can. But how then can we help ourselves? Give her confidence to go out there and find a job. I can help. I told her to go and try and seek social services. I told her to go to the Department of Labor. But we have to be willing to help ourselves as well. So I saw that as tough love. Now, you may see me as being a hypocrite, and you entitled to your opinion. And I accept that that's your point of view. And I will reflect to see whether or not I was being a hypocrite. Was I being a hypocrite? I helped her once by giving her money, but I didn't think that was going to solve her problem. But I thank you for giving me a different perspective. I don't agree with you, but I accept that that is your position. And I think we need to be accepting of the different opinions and accepting of the views of others and to be respectful. So I thank you for that divergent and that different point of view. So thank you for that. So any other opportunity for any more call-in? No? So I think that's it. It's been a wonderful, wonderful show. And I thank everyone, even those that don't agree with me. You have a voice and you have a space on this show. And I thank you. And I thank you all for your support. And it's going to be agape all the way. We're going to be dealing in this show with agape love. We don't always have to agree with each other. We need to respect one another. Thank you.